master has become pleased or satisfied with our service?
I asked that question of Srila Prabhupada one time. I asked, when you do something good in Krishna consciousness, how does the spiritual master know? And I think the purpose of my question was to ask, how do you get the credit? But anyway, Prabhupada answered, why the spiritual master? He said, everyone will know. He said, face is the index of mind. So when you're doing nicely in Krishna consciousness, everyone will know. That was his answer. But we can understand from another point of view that when we're following the instructions of the spiritual master, the spiritual master is pleased. And when we're doing something else, we consult the instructions of the spiritual master, the instructions of the scriptures, guidance of senior devotees, sadhus, and pray to Krishna that we're doing the right thing in our attempt to follow.
Okay, the next question is for Makhanlal Prabhu. Krishna loves everyone, but one of his qualities is he is all renounced. Doesn't it sound contradictory?
Well, dualities exist in the mundane world. Dualities do not exist in the absolute realm. Krishna consciousness exists exclusively in the absolute realm, where there are no such dualities. So, Krishna is renounced means he has no interest in the mundane. He delegates those things to his various energies. This entire Mahatattva, the material cloud, he expands himself. That is to say, he delegates into himself his expansion, Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Shurdakshaya Vishnu. Then from the feminine side, Shibati Radharani has got a tiny, tiny, tiny partial expansion in Durga, the material energy. This is explained in the Brahma Samhita that the material energy is a partial expansion of Shrimati Radharani. So then within the universes, there are demigods. Each universe has its demigods. And they are also taking affairs, managing affairs. So therefore, Krishna is Atmarama. He has nothing. Krishna, the flute player, he has nothing to do with the mundane world. There are so many expansions and delegates who are taking care of things. Therefore, you have to be very careful because you could become such a person like that also. You could easily become a demigod just by chanting Hare Krishna and eating Krishna prasadam. You could become a demigod. That's a trap, you know. So Krishna has nothing to do with the material world, but if you render devotional service, then he is not renounced towards his devotees. He is always anxious to interact with his devotees. Then, of course, there is this famous verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Ye tamam prabhadyante tam satayva bhajami aham. All of them, as they surrender unto me, I reward accordingly. Krishna is eager to interact with his devotees. He does not renounce his devotees. He renounces that which is not directly in relationship with him, those things that are taking place within the realm of avidya or ignorance, this material existence. But when it comes to his devotees, he's very attracted by his devotees. He doesn't renounce his devotees unless it's in the category of special lila. If sometimes Krishna becomes displeased, if Srimati Radharani becomes puffed up, and in Krishna book is described that she was becoming very proud. Yes, I am. Just see how I am the most favored devotee. And she was riding on Krishna's shoulders. And he goes under a limb of a tree in such a way she's forced to grab under the tree. And then poof, he disappears. So you can say that's renunciation. But inside of that is love. Inside of that is rasa. So He only renounces those things which are not related to him with pure unalloyed bhakti. Otherwise, he is very attached to his devotees. He is eager. Otherwise, why should he want that we should go back to him? He wants we should go back to him to increase his pleasure. He is Purusha. We are Prakriti. We are enjoyed. We are to be enjoyed by him. He is Purusha. He is the supreme male to enjoy everything. He wants us to come back, and then the pure devotees, the Mahabhagavats, the Nityasiddha devotees, the Sakyavishavatars, they are sent into this world to bring us back. Prabhupada uses the word canvas. Krishna is canvassing. Well, if Krishna is so renounced that he doesn't care one or the other, why is he canvassing? You know, canvassing means to solicit, to make propaganda. You come with me. Come back, Prabhupada said. He loves to paraphrase. Prabhupada's paraphrasing Krishna's way of thinking and talking. Paraphrases Krishna like this. Give up your dirty dance of this material world and come dance with me. Krishna wants we should join with him. So that has nothing to do with renouncing the mundane. Only he's not interested, very interested in the non-devotees. And even then he doesn't really renounce them because he remains with the jivas as the super soul guiding them, even a fly, how to find a filthy place. So Krishna's renounced because he doesn't need anything. But actually, he always has love for his living entities. Anything you want to add? Okay.
Next one is for Niranjan Swami Maharaj. Queen Kunti is the incarnation of the success potency of Lord Krishna. So what specifically is or was her success?
What was not her success? She was totally successful.
That's the first I heard you say the incarnation is successful.
What's going on?
I've not heard the expression she's the incarnation of success poems before. I don't know. But certainly we can understand her success is just as she offers in her prayers let my mind be as the Ganges forever flows to the ocean, simply let my mind always be drawn towards unto you, Krishna. So she prays in this way because we understand the real criteria of success in spiritual life is that one is always remembering the Supreme Lord. Queen Kunti, she was able to completely detach herself. She prayed to Krishna to sever her attachment to her family members. And she achieved all success because she was achieved this perfectional stage of full remembrance of the Lord. I don't know if there's a particular explanation of something beyond that of the criteria of her success, because it's the first I heard that she's the incarnation of success.
And that was my question. Prabhupada writes that in purport in the first canto.
He does.
Yeah, he describes her as that. And it's always, that question has always been in my mind, because in the examples of devotees who have achieved perfection in the nine different processes, like offering prayers and remembrances, other devotees are listed, and she's now listed there. So I was just curious. You know, it's always been a question in my mind. Why is that? You know, maybe there's nothing specific that she did in this particular lila that's described in Bhagavatam. And again, maybe there is. I just don't know about it.
Well, she was certainly completely successful in her dependence on Krishna and in the famous pastime where it was Dushasan, wasn't it, who tried to disrobe her in the arena?
It's Draupadi.
Draupadi. Yes.
Okay, the second?
Kunti.
Second part of Goswami Prabhu's question is, how many years, this is for Jayadeva Swami Maharaj, how many years was Vidura gone from Hastinapur after having been insulted by Duryodhana?
And how old was he? And what month did he leave in?
Okay, another question to Jayadeva Swami Maharaj is, This is for Jai Goswami Maharaj. One of the qualities of the soul is he is all knowledgeable. Does that mean that he knows everything about Krishna?
One of the qualities of
the soul is that he is all knowledgeable, all knowing.
No, it doesn't mean he knows everything about Krishna. Even Krishna doesn't know everything about Krishna. That's mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Krishna is unlimited, so when he tries to understand himself, he extends his knowledge potency, which is also unlimited. But then when he's extended that knowledge potency to understand himself, he's also now expanded, so he has to expand his potency again. So even Krishna doesn't understand himself. So the soul is all-knowing means according to his small size. And just like a light, the small light is completely effulgent and the big light is completely effulgent. But the small light doesn't have the same scope, same extent as the big light.
This one is from Niranjan Swami Maharaj. As Vaishnavas, we understand that we are supposed to forgive those who hurt us. What does it mean to forgive others? Because if we think we can forgive others, we consider ourselves to be devotee. First part is, what does it mean to forgive?
Forgive. Well, first of all, it explains in the Bhagavatam that this quality of forgiveness is the essential characteristic of even of a Brahmin. A Brahmin should be forgiving. What to speak of a Vaishnava? And to forgive somebody means that Prabhupada explains, I think, in the purport in the Bhagavad Gita. He describes that the devotee will always forgive the minor offenses committed by others. Even though someone may apparently offend a devotee, the devotee will forgive him because he understands that this living entity, this jiva, actually, especially if it's a living entity or who is a non-devotee, but he is captivated by the power of the illusory energy. Just as Lord Jesus Christ, Prabhupada uses him as an example, as somebody who is completely forgiving even upon his persecutors. Haridas Thakura, Prabhupada uses the example, he was forgiving towards the prison guards who were beating him through 22 marketplaces. Because that quality of forgiveness means that they understand that, or also another example, the example is given of Dharma the bull in the Bhagavatam. When Parikshit Maharaj came before Dharma the bull and asked Dharma who has done this, then Dharma said that if I recognize the perpetrator of my suffering, then I understand that nothing happens without the will of the Lord, and therefore I'm just as responsible as the perpetrator himself. So, therefore, Parikshit could understand that Dharma was religiosity personified, and because he exemplified this primary characteristic of religious principles of not pointing out the perpetrator of one's own suffering, because they could understand that nothing can happen without the will of the Lord. It's not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Lord. So, therefore, these examples, Lord Jesus Christ, Haridas Thakura, they're given as characteristic of persons, are Vaishnavas, of course, who are on a very high, elevated platform, and therefore they felt compassion for even for those who perpetrated any injustice, apparent injustice towards themselves, because they did not see it in that way. And therefore their forgiveness was invoking the compassion of the Lord. Now, of course, we understand also that if somebody offends a devotee of the Lord, the devotee may not recognize the perpetrator of the suffering, but we know that the Lord, the example is given of Maharaj Ambarish. Maharaj Ambarish took shelter of the Lord, and he was not in the least bit disturbed when Durvasa Muni invoked the demon to punish him for his apparent offense of breaking his fast before Durvasa Muni returned. But then the Lord, he, because he's always the protector of his devotees, he may not forgive. So, therefore, forgiveness actually means to be really able to be forgiven. Forgiving means you have to be Krishna conscious, and you have to see that you're completely dependent upon the Lord. Not because, and Prabhupada even makes this point, the devotee doesn't depend upon the Lord, asking him, the Lord, to protect him. He says it in the reference to Maharaj Ambarish. He says, it is the nature of the devotee simply to remember the Lord under all difficult circumstances. Not that he's asking the Lord for protection. But the Lord is naturally inclined to protect. So, forgiveness means that I understand that whatever happens to me cannot happen independent from the will of the Lord. Now, of course, there are other examples that are given by, I'll take it even a little bit farther. Bhakti Vinod Thakur explains in Harinam Chintamani, he says that sometimes we may offend a Vaishnava, and a Vaishnava may not forgive. And of course, the possibility is that the Vaishnava has not forgiven is maybe because the person who has committed the offense didn't really sincerely beg for forgiveness. He may be thinking, I'm going to this Vaishnava because I don't want to suffer. Therefore, to avoid suffering, I'll ask for forgiveness. But that's not real repentance. It's not, the person hasn't realized the severity of his act, of his offense committed towards the Vaishnava. He simply goes before the Vaishnava thinking that I've committed something and therefore to avoid any suffering, I'll just externally. So the Vaishnava may not forgive. And to punish. Uh-huh. To punish that person, that's also the mercy of a Vaishnava. And that under such cases, the person who may realize that I committed some offense to this Vaishnava and the Vaishnava has not forgiven me. And then Bhakti Vinod Thakur says that if that happens, in such a case that happens, then the devotee, if it's a devotee who's committed the offense, then the devotee should simply approach the holy name and simply try to take shelter of the holy name and then attempt to go back again to the Vaishnava and beg him for his forgiveness. So, forgiveness is a sign of compassion. Basically, that is the point.
This is for Jayadvaita Swami Maharaj. We find many devotees, even initiated devotees, running with horoscopes to find suitable husbands or wives for their children, who are also devotees. What is the Krishna conscious perspective?
Astrology is also one of the sciences, maybe not always perfectly practiced in the present age. It's the duty of the parents to get the children nicely married, so they have to consider who's a qualified boy, who's a qualified girl, who's a good match. So on some criteria they have to decide. The character, the family, so many things. So astrological calculation is supposed to be one of the means of seeing to these things. I don't see a problem with it.
This is for Radhanath Swami Maharaj. For any devotee, or a pure devotee, to even think of blasphemy of his spiritual master or the Supreme Lord cannot be imagined. But if the pure devotee is ordered by his spiritual master to speak against him, then such an order is very difficult to execute. But Lord Shiva executed this order by spreading Mayavad philosophy. Surely for Lord Shiva to do this is a heartbreaking act, to speak against his most beloved Lord. Please help me to understand this aspect of devotion, which for me it seems very difficult to comprehend.
Lord Shiva could also drink poison and not be affected. That is his power.
Hare Krishna.
It was an act of mercy. His spreading of Mayavad philosophy was on the order of Lord Vishnu for a very particular and specific purpose in this age of Kali, which in ways facilitated the supreme glorious descent of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So you cannot imitate Lord Shiva unless you can drink deadly poison and live to speak about it.
This is for Makhanlal Prabhu. Hare Krishna, I behave nicely with good relationships with all devotees except one or two equals. But I heard that if you are envious of even one devotee, you cannot go back home, back to Godhead. So what to do?
Well, you just heard a nice explanation of forgiveness. Generally, you should try to serve that devotee for whom you have some negative feeling, because by serving that devotee, you can become purified and let go of that offensive mentality. If necessary, you might carefully confess to that devotee if it's been sort of an electrically charged situation, so to speak, where there's been some kind of friction between the two. Then you should be prepared to accept responsibility. No matter how much you think the other person is wrong and you are right, that, of course, is a million miles from the Vaishnava way of thinking. So our process is Gopi Parakalam Das Anudas Anudas. So you should think how you can serve that person, and you should go clean with that person. You say, Prabhu, I'm very sorry. I have made the mistake of harboring some bad feeling towards you, and it is my shortcoming because I am a fallen jiva and I'm covered over by the darkness of ignorance. Please forgive me for my shortcomings and please help me to get out of this ignorance. Most people will respond to plain old-fashioned Vaishnav humility, but people in general especially respond if you accept the responsibility for that problem instead of always trying to make the other person wrong and trying to fix and change the other person, trying to make them into somebody else. That, well, if they were just like this, this, and this, you know, and you write out a whole list of things that you wish they were like, well, then I might like them, you know. But that's not the Vaishnava way of thinking. The Vaishnava way of thinking is Gopi Parakamalam Das Anudasana Das. So you try to serve that person and try to, unless it's really bad, I mean, like if it's a temple president and you're in that temple and it's just not working out, then maybe you should go through whatever authority channels are necessary and serve in a different situation. So there are a lot of Desa Kalapatra considerations, but you should accept responsibility.
The 2-4 Jayadev Swami Maharaj. Krishna and his deity are non-different from each other. Is it also true with the demigods and their deities?
Supposed to be. We see that when that Jagvarat was supposed to be killed, then Durga came out of the deity. So the demigods also have some capability, they're also supposed to be present where the deity is present.
Second, Krishna's senses are unlimited, Pajayadev Swami Maharaj. Krishna's senses are unlimited, so how can we satisfy his senses?
That Krishna's senses are unlimited means that they're capable of being satisfied with the smallest offering from a sincere devotee.
This is for Radhana Swami Maharaj. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, I protect my devotees. But many devotees fall down from the devotional path. So how is he protecting them?
Krishna reveals himself as we surrender to him. To the degree we sincerely take shelter of Krishna, Krishna protects us.
This next one is from Niranjan Swami Maharaj. In the Sankirtan Dharma, meat eating is considered as sinful, but the Mohammedans sacrifice goats on Bakri Eid to please Allah. So how these diametrically opposite instructions can lead to please God, who is the same for both, and how do you explain this to Mohammedans in Russia?
But you want to add something to the last one, Chris? Is that, were you asking to add something to the last one? I don't know.
Well, yeah, I can answer it later.
Okay. So, obviously, that meat eating, we cannot accept it as a means for our meat eating or slaughtering animals. We cannot accept it as a means for satisfying the Supreme Lord. We understand it as a concession. So, if somebody gives a concession, doesn't mean that they're satisfied by it. It means it's because you can't do it, therefore a concession is given and a particular way of performing the sacrifice is given. It is simply an interpretation of those who see those concessions given in the scriptures and have utilized them as an opportunity simply to justify their own attachments. So we cannot say that slaughtering goats and offering them in sacrifice for the sake of eating them is actually an act of satisfying the Supreme Lord. And basically, that's the same way that we would preach to some a Mohammedan or a Muslim in Russia. There's a difference between accepting a concession, which is given in the scripture, and performing an act, a selfless act, for the object of one's worship.
Jayadev Swami Maharaj, how can one become a strong pakka brahmachari?
Associate with strong pakka brahmacharis.
Another one for Jayadev Swami Maharaj. Maharaj, when a natural disaster occurs, such as the tsunami, where should we stand as an organization, that is our ISKCON society?
Well, these natural disasters confirm the point of view of our philosophy. We say that the material world is naturally disastrous, that there's always... we're not joking. That the material world is full of disasters, that there's always misery caused by other living beings, by the body and mind, or by natural forces. So we're not shocked or appalled or put into confusion or perplexity about how such things could happen, how God could allow such things to happen. We understand that these are in line with the standard expectation of what this material world is about. It's exactly in accordance with the nature of this material world. Either it's going to be a tsunami or an earthquake, or in the newspapers, when they're done with the tsunami, the next thing will come. There'll be a disaster here, a disaster there, a war here, something else there. It's the nature of the material world. Dukkhalaya mashashatam. Krishna says the material world is dukkhalaya. So it's a strong point for us
that you're thinking that this is a vacation spot, this material world, but it's just the opposite. And it's not limited to over there, that they're in such and such state or such and such country. The entire material world is a place like that. And unfortunately, all these people died without completing the mission of human life. That's the catastrophe. It's otherwise, everyone has to die, that's expected. But if one becomes perfect in self-realization and then dies, his life is successful. And if one doesn't even begin to inquire about self-realization, and then he dies, then it's a catastrophe. His life is a failure. After 8,400,000 species of life, finally he got a human body, and he thought, let me enjoy. And he never inquired about spiritual realization, and then he died. So that's the real catastrophe.
This one is for Radhana Swami Maharaj. Hare Krishna, I wish to know, how should the sadhana and service of Matajis with small children be? Should they take up services neglecting their children?
Pitana se syaj janina sa syaj. Srimad Bhagavat philosophy is, you have no right to be a mother or a father unless under your care that child will never take birth again in this material world. If you have a child, it is a responsibility before God that that child will become a pure devotee. As far as you can serve the child within your power, that is your service. To think that taking care of a child in a Krishna conscious way is less than doing some seva at the temple is an illusion. It is your service to Krishna. If you neglect your child for other services, you're committing an offense. So it is the mother's prime duty to make sure that that child has the love, the care, and the protection and the association that is required for that child to naturally grow in loving Krishna.
The next is from Makhanlal Prabhu. What is the secret of your enthusiasm in Krishna consciousness?
Have several hours. The secret is Prabhupada's mercy, but also understanding that Srila Prabhupada is in the present tense, not in the past tense, making a tasteful arrangement for an actual link with Krishna, an actual connection with Krishna. Krishna is not theoretical to me, and I also personally do Deity worship. Those are my deities that are sitting there, my Shalagram, my Jagannath Baladev Subhadra. And I've had many, well, actually, since before I just brand new devotee, I've had a lot of special mercy, even since I was a brand new devotee, very foolish and green, as are most brand new devotees, especially Western brand new devotees. I'll give you an example of an experience that really left a mark in my faith in Krishna. And also, well, I'll give you two examples. My first experience with Srila Prabhupada, I had been waiting for some months. I joined right after Rath Yatra, San Francisco, 1968. And so I had to wait for some months because Srila Prabhupada was not in San Francisco. Then he came in October. So I joined in August, and he came in October. I had to wait a couple of months. And when I first saw Srila Prabhupada at the airport, he suddenly appeared on the top of the landing of the stairs, roll-up stairs, for old-fashioned roll-up stairs. And I had no conception of Prabhupada except the black and white pictures I had seen where he looked rather serious. But as soon as I saw Srila Prabhupada appear on top of those stairs, he was covered with 10 garlands, gardenias, very large scented flowers this big around. And he was beaming like millions of suns, huge smile, beaming, radiating massive amounts of love, mercy, and compassion. Thus, all my doubts, mental speculations, fears, etc., were dispelled instantly upon seeing him. And that's the conclusion of the Shastra, that such a Prema Bhakti, such a Mahabhagavat, fully self-realized soul who is in love with Krishna, even a moment's association with such a person can completely transform and deliver anyone. So that installed my faith and love for Srila Prabhupada, that first darshan. Then later, when I was going out, there was no program except Harinam Sankirtan in San Francisco, and we were chanting in the street, and I was covered over. One day, the party was chanting, and I was feeling very mental, you know, mana retena, chariot of the mind. So it was my turn to distribute invitations for the temple. We had no books in those days. And so I purposely wandered away from the Harinam Sankirtan party down the street about half a block or so because I was very covered over that day. And I saw a flyer on the sidewalk. It said, it was an invitation to a peace rally. This was the 1960s, so peace rallies were still going on, and I used to do that kind of thing as a non-devotee, go to those kind of events. So I picked up this invitation to this peace rally, and I was just looking at it. Suddenly a streetcar pulled up, and a man, the doors open, and a man walks straight out of the streetcar. Keep in mind, this is 1969. No books are printed or being distributed yet. Teachings of Lord Chaitanya was barely out. There was no book distribution program. The movement, there was only a few hundred devotees around the whole world who were disciples of Srila Prabhupada. So this man walks straight up to me, sees what I have in my hands, and says, "Isn't that called Maya?" And I was like struck with wonder. I was stunned. I thought, my God, I just go, yes, it is. I know I didn't know much philosophy, but I knew by then what Maya meant. Then I became flooded with a great feeling of love and affection. I felt convinced, yes, Krishna really loves me. He sent this man, and he's taking care of me. He saw that I was starting to float a little bit on the mental platform. He sent this man just to bring me back in, and I felt very warm, like somebody put a warm blanket of love around me. And I enthusiastically went back to the Harinam Sankirtan party. But over the years, I've had many, many wonderful experiences only by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada gives Krishna. Your Guru Maharaj, as a representative of Prabhupada, everyone as a teamwork who are part of Prabhupada's team are giving Krishna. So Krishna's real. Krishna's not theoretical to me. That is my success. Krishna's not theoretical. Krishna makes a difference. I want to live my life to try to please Srila Prabhupada and Krishna. If I were to, whatever I do to displease Krishna, it's a ding on my record. I feel it. If I do something to displease Krishna, it's like a bruise or something like that. So I live for trying to actually improve more and more, uncover more and more my relationship with Krishna by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada.
This is Pajaya Swami Maharaj. One regulative principle that the devas, the demigods follow is no meat eating. How then? Devotees? Okay. The one regulative principle that devotees follow is no meat eating. So how then Garuji is allowed to eat snakes?
He's a bird. Human beings have to follow these four regulative principles. for Garuda, snake is the natural snack.
Okay, next one. In Satyayuga, the lifespan is 100,000 years. How is it that Ajamil became old when he was just 80 or 90 years young man?
Next question.
This is for Niranjan Swami Maharaj. Maharaj, we don't want to commit aparad, but what is the remedy for mental aparads?
I think that was... I think Makamal Prabhu already to some degree answered that question. I can't remember what the question was before, by saying that if you're feeling envious towards somebody, you have to approach that person and you have to look for an opportunity to serve them. So if one is committing an aparad within the mind, obviously there's an object for the aparad, for the offense, so one should go to that person, and you should actually go before that person, offer your obeisances to them, and you should look for an opportunity to serve them and to be able to appreciate. There's something, obviously, that if we're seeing some, if it's an aparad, then at least we can recognize that I'm the one that's wrong. So therefore, there's some defect or deficiency within myself. Otherwise, we may say, well, what do you do if you find some fault with another one? But if we're classifying as an aparad, then obviously I'm the person who's the aparadi. I'm committing the offense, so therefore I'm the person who's at fault. Therefore, that's at least a benefit to be able to see it that way. And therefore, you can go before the person and try to clear yourself for that person by saying that in my mind is offensive and I would like to simply offer my obeisance to you and ask if there's some way that I can render some service to you and hopefully be able to clear one's consciousness from that aparad or offense that's within one's mind. But you have to go back to the person, as any other aparad offense. You have to go back to the person, that's the object of the aparad.
This is for Radhana Swami Maharaj. What is the atonement recommended if a devotee commits some gross mistake and falls down?
Could you repeat the question? What? Could you repeat the question?
What is the atonement recommended if a devotee commits some gross mistake and falls down?
First, one should take a humble position, not try to justify or defend his position, which is the natural quality of the ego. Generally, it is because of the false ego and offenses that are born of false ego that Krishna withdraws his protection and we fall down. So we must humble ourselves. You can't really repent unless you take a very, very humble position. Not try to find excuses. Not try to blame others. Not try to justify how and why it happened. But accept the responsibility that I did wrong and I am responsible and I am fallen. And in that humble state, to really make resolution in your heart that I will never do this again. At the same time, one must take shelter of the words of the spiritual master. One must take shelter of the association of devotees. One must take shelter of Prabhupada's books, Harikatha, and one must take shelter of Krishna and his holy names.
This is for Jayadev Swami Maharaj. We discard material happiness as limited and temporary. But in spiritual life also, we see that the happiness we derive, at least in the conditioned stage, is of ephemeral nature. So, when we say that spiritual happiness is eternal, what do we mean by that? Is it eternal only for pure devotees?
What we mean by happiness, in terms of its being, it's constitutionally eternal. Devotional service is the platform of happiness. It's not that our idea of happiness is just elation. In the material world, there's happiness and there's distress. But on the spiritual platform, everything is happiness. There was some picture of Prabhupada where he looked very unhappy, actually, very almost morose. And one devotee asked Prabhupada about it. Prabhupada said, "Oh, that?" He said, "That was a moment of ecstasy." The materialists are happy. You know, they go to an amusement park and they laugh, and that's happiness for them. But a devotee is constitutionally happy. Whether there's so-called happiness or so-called distress, he's on the position of eternal existence and eternal happiness. Now, that happiness may sometimes be more manifest. It may be sometimes less apparent. But it's constitutional, just like health. Sometimes, you know, you just feel super healthy. But you're healthy in any case. That's natural, just to be healthy. But a diseased person, sometimes he's feeling better, sometimes he's feeling worse, but he's diseased. He's predominantly diseased. The material life means that our source of happiness is illusory. It's not substantial. And in fact, that happiness is the cause of future distress. Now I'm enjoying, and the result will be that later I'm suffering. So it's not actually happiness in any case. And devotional happiness, because it's connected with Krishna, because it pertains to my eternal nature, is on the eternal platform.
Another one for you, Maharaj, Jayadev Swami Maharaj. Pratyaksha Praman is faulty because our senses are imperfect. But in Shabda Praman, our ears are used, which again is one of our imperfect senses.
How about that? Therefore, we have to hear again and again.
This is for Radhana Swami Maharaj. As it is said that we should keep ourselves always engaged in chanting of the holy names, but I get more interest in doing kirtan than chanting on my japa beads. What should I prefer, or is this the right attitude?
Kirtan is chanting. That is Krishna's great blessing if we have a taste for the kirtan of the holy name. The acharyas have explained the proper method of always remembering Krishna. And they have given us minimum rule. Prabhupada has taught us at least 16 rounds of japa, where we are exclusively engrossed in taking shelter of the holy name. But he has also taught us Nam Sankirtan, and we can do that all of the time. Krishna's holy name is equally perfect whether we're chanting Nam Kirtan or we're chanting Nam Japa. Krishna reveals himself according to our humility and according to our sincerity and attentiveness in chanting. So it's not one or the other. Prabhupada insisted devotees must perform Nam Sankirtan together. and devotees must individually chant japa. So the physician knows exactly how to balance the medicine in such a perfect way that it will heal the disease of forgetfulness of Krishna and bring us back to our healthy state as pure loving servants of the Lord.
This is from Niranjan Swami Maharaj. What should be the right attitude of a sadhaka to be successful in Krishna consciousness?
To be successful, one must know the difference between sadhana and sadhya. To be successful means that one must know what is sadhya, what is the goal of one sadhana. And if one understands what is the goal of one sadhana, then he can be a successful sadhana.
This is for Jayadev Swami Maharaj. We have heard in the history of India that so many times the Muslims have performed a lot of atrocities. They have killed Hindus, destroyed temples, etc. Because of this, I have developed a lot of hatred for Muslims. How should I deal with this?
Well, this is the bodily platform, isn't it? Upadi. Someone is a Muslim, and the Muslims for thousands of years have done atrocities, but not that Muslim. You know, someone's standing before you, has he been around committing atrocities for thousands of years? But you're seeing in terms of, you know, in terms of a bodily designation. A tall man killed my brother and now I hate all tall men. Huh? Also, yeah, it means that we're thinking in terms of bodily designations. It may also mean that we're giving submissive oral reception to propaganda. There are people whose best selfish interests are served by invective directed against this community or that community. You know, if I give another speech bashing the Muslims, then I figure I'll get 5% more votes. And then I'm listening to that and I don't realize that I'm being manipulated. So to be freed from such manipulations, because I'm thinking I'm Hindu and they're Muslim, and this, all in terms of bodily designation. So Krishna consciousness means sarvopadi vinirmuktam. One has to be freed from all these upadis, tatpratena nirmalam, and come to pure consciousness, rishikena rishikesha sevanam, and engage my senses in the service of the master of the senses. From another point of view, if we want to stop this problem of this community or that community bashing against the Hindus, then make them Krishna conscious. What's your contribution to the matter? Just to be angry or to sit there and broil about it? Do something. What do you propose to do to solve the problem? Shoot more people? What? So our proposal is bring people to the level of Krishna consciousness. It's not that Hindus, by the way, have been always kind and merciful to the Muslims. You know, the Muslims have been atrocious. They've been doing horrible things for thousands of years, while the Hindus have all been sadhus. Hindu community is full of rascals. Muslim community is full of rascals. Christian community is full of rascals. The whole world is full of rascals. And they're all doing their own brand of atrocity. The Hindus, you can find lots of records of Hindu-inspired atrocities. So as long as we're thinking, I'm this, I'm that, I belong to this group, that group, we have to come to the Brahmabhuta platform, the spiritual platform, and not see in terms of these mundane designations.
Another one for you, Maharaj. for Jayadev Swami Maharaj. How one should study Srila Prabhupada's books? To study his philosophy or for self-purification?
Me?
Yes.
Studying the philosophy is self-purification. It's not two separate things. Should I study to understand the philosophy, or should I study for self-purification? If I study and understand the philosophy, that is self-purification.
This is for Makhanlal Prabhu. How can we develop the appreciation for Krishna's mercy?
Appreciation?
For Krishna's mercy.
How can we develop appreciation for Krishna's mercy? The first point is to hear the philosophy by reading in Srila Prabhupada's books and take example. That's why the Bhagavatam is narration of pastimes. Actually, the majority of the Bhagavatam is involving Krishna's devotees. That's not by accident. Of course, Lord Vishnu appears in so many of these pastimes, but many of the pastimes may involve other personalities, other exalted personalities who are devotees, like the Pandavas are in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So many Arjunas in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Uddhava or Vidura. Vidura, for example, was faced with a very unfavorable situation. He was living with his brother Dhritarashtra, who was opposed to the Pandavas, and Vidura knew that the Pandavas were highly qualified saintly persons, and he knew they were pure devotees of the Lord. He kept trying to advise his brother not to persecute them. So we should learn how to appreciate from the Shastra by hearing about how the first class Prema Bhakti Mahabhagwats, pure devotees of the Lord, fully self-realized souls, how they appreciate Krishna and follow in their footsteps. Then also we should try to learn how Prabhupada, in his manifest pastimes on this planet, how Srila Prabhupada was appreciating Krishna. We should also learn and observe how experienced devotees are appreciating Krishna. But ultimately, hearing is the answer. Hearing about the glories of the Lord. See, if people want to develop their appreciation for a rock and roll star or a movie hero, they will buy every book available about that person. They will plaster their room with posters of their hero or heroine. They will read anything they can get their hands on. They will try to get association. So many things they will do to increase their appreciation and fan the flames of their appreciation for that person. We have to do the same thing with Krishna. And we should also bandhanam, the process of prayer. We should pray, "Oh my dear Lord, I am so unfortunate, I have no appreciation." Mahaprabhu, he prayed like that. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prayed, "But I am so unfortunate, I have no attraction." But he was situated in Mahabhav. So it's for our example that acharyas are praying like that. We should take those examples, take shelter of those examples. "My dear Lord, I am so unfortunate, I have no attraction. Please arise within my heart as attraction for you so I can render better quality service to my Guru Maharaj, better quality service to the mission of Srila Prabhupada." We should pray like that. We should ask for it also. So we can come to that point of lalyam lalasamayi. Lalyam lalasamayi means greed. That is Rupa Goswami's advice in the Nectar of Devotion. We need to take that advice of Srila Rupa Goswami.
This is for this is short announcement. In the later part of the day, we are going to have a wonderful multimedia presentation here. So these three poles, the one near the speaker, the next question is for Jayadev Swami Maharaj. Once one new person asked me, why maximum incarnations of Krishna were in India only? But I could not give any answer. So could you kindly elaborate?
India's Punya Bhumi. Every place has its specific characteristics. Something that it's known for or that it's conducive for. In Japan at the moment, it's electronics. In America, it's military aggression.
And India's characteristic is punya. It's the pious place. It's a fortunate, pious place. Just like the city is a place, you know, all in industry and this, and the country is a different kind of place. So India has that characteristic, that it's a place particularly conducive to spiritual realization and particularly cultivated in spiritual realization. That's why Prabhupada used to quote, Parata Bhumite Manusha Janmohe Lojar, Janma Sarta Kori Karuparupakar. That don't think that you took birth in India so that you could work in a call center. That such a fortunate opportunity is meant for cultivating Krishna consciousness and spreading Krishna consciousness. So it's Krishna's mercy that he comes to this particular place. He could come anywhere. Malayasyeva Chandanam. In the Bhagavatam it said that Krishna could appear anywhere. But by his grace he chooses to appear in the family of Yadu. He chooses to appear in India. He's independent. He can do as he likes, but he's bestowing his mercy here. So then those who are so fortunate as to have taken birth as human beings in India should capitalize on that good fortune, make their lives successful in Krishna consciousness, and then give it for the rest of the world. If just like if the Arab countries, the Middle East and Russia, if they started hoarding all the oil, then it would create material problems throughout the world. So if India hoards its spiritual assets and doesn't distribute them, that is why there's problems in the world, that this message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or message of Krishna is meant to be distributed vigorously all over the world. And those who've gotten the opportunity to come in touch with Krishna consciousness should make it their serious business. That I have to, just as Prabhupada, that I have to spread the message of my the mission of my Guru Maharaj. I have to spread this message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we're meant for that. And Prabhupada was always very particular. I remember sometimes in New York, you know, there'd be a full room full of people, and there'd be one Indian person, and Prabhupada would be hitting on this point, Bharata Bhumite Manusha Janmohe Lojar. Because in my estimation, Prabhupada wanted that people who come from India should particularly take this. They should follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's order, and they should spread Krishna consciousness vigorously and make it go everywhere.
This is for Niranjan Swami Maharaj. There is an ongoing pressure of sense objects on us. Srila Prabhupada's disciples appear to overcome it by their faith and love for him. How to increase our love and faith for our spiritual master?
Well, faith comes from following the instructions of the spiritual master. And when one follows the instructions of the spiritual master and sees how by following those instructions one's life improves and one can overcome the difficulties, then naturally appreciation, gratitude and love will come forth in a very natural way. We have to learn how to always be fully dependent upon the instructions which are given to us. Just as the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a wonderful verse by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami where he says that the path is difficult and I am blind and my feet are slipping again and again. Therefore I'm praying for the saints to grant me their stick of mercy for my support. So that stick of mercy means that we have to understand that it is very, very difficult to make advancement in spiritual life without taking help from a superior devotee. And the more one takes that help and feels strength as the result of taking shelter, then naturally love will grow because one is feeling that reciprocation in a relationship. So it begins with faith. And then when faith, by applying the instructions of the spiritual master and seeing how by application of those instructions helps us to advance, then love and appreciation will also naturally follow.
This is for Jayadev Swami Maharaj. Hiranyakashipu performed austerities for...
Before you get to that, I'm just thinking about that previous question. You know, someone's complaining, some new person is asking why these incarnations all appeared in India. It's like somebody comes to your quarter and starts giving out like hapush mangoes. And then you start complaining, well, why here? No, you were so fortunate that they're giving out the mangoes. Here, take them, stupid. And Krishna is so kind that he's appeared in your neighborhood. Just take advantage and don't say, well, why here? Okay, good question.
Hiranyakashipu performed austerities for 100 celestial years while Prahlad was in the womb of Kayadu. So, how is it that Prahlad was only 5 years old when Hiranyakashipu came back home? What does it mean, Maharaj? No comment or who cares?
Well, somebody obviously cares. But it doesn't mean I have to care.
This is for Niranjan Swami Maharaj. How can we avoid viewing our spiritual master's activities on the material platform, which often happens because of close association with him? And the second part is, how can we view our spiritual master as Satchidananda?
Satchidananda. Srila Prabhupada did quote that, familiarity breeds contempt. One has to be very, very careful to not become so familiar that one begins to perceive the activities of the spiritual master as ordinary material activities. And sometimes we even see that even in Srila Prabhupada's case is that he would distance sometimes some disciples if he saw their familiarity was setting in, because how can a disciple advance if he thinks his spiritual master is an ordinary personality, an ordinary human being? It's very difficult. One actually has to have implicit faith. Yasya Devi Parabhakti Yata Devi Katata Guru. For one who has implicit faith in both the Supreme Lord and to the spiritual master, then all the imports of Vedic literatures will automatically become revealed. So, if one is actually getting that kind of perspective about one's spiritual master, then one has to look within his own heart and actually examine, why am I thinking this way? And if it's simply due to his relativizing the position of the spiritual master, then he should understand that it would be probably better for him to distance himself so that he can actually appreciate and to see the spiritual master for in terms of what he's actually delivering, what he's actually giving to his disciple and giving to other disciples, rather than simply looking for the flaw, for the imperfection. It's recommended that one should not see any flaw or imperfection as something material. There'll be flaws. What is the example given? Just like there are bubbles in the Ganges, one should not think that there's some imperfection in the behavior of the spiritual master, that it is something material. Prabhupada actually was the one story. Maharaj, I think that was with you also on a morning walk. Wasn't there something like that? What was that?
I asked Srila Prabhupada that...
Yes.
I was in Mayapur. We were on a morning walk. I asked Srila Prabhupada that sometimes we see from the mundane point of view that the spiritual master makes mistakes. Prabhupada said, that is mundane point of view. Then I said that, well, sometimes even we see that in spiritual things, he he may forget a verse or misquote a verse. And Prabhupada again said that that was the mundane point of view. In the discussion, it came out that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was the greatest scholar, but he accepted as his spiritual master Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, who was illiterate. So we have to see not in terms, as you said, not in terms of material qualifications, but how we have to see how the spiritual master is preaching and how he's engaged in devotional service.
Also, in our society, we are in a society, we are all the spiritual descendants of Srila Prabhupada. We are either direct initiates or grand disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Everyone should see in ISKCON, if you are initiated by one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, you should see them as being the servant of Srila Prabhupada and appreciate whatever service they are doing for Prabhupada's mission, because all of my godbrothers who have accepted disciples are doing very wonderful service, and they are very, very extended. They are doing so much service, as a matter of fact, traveling all over the world, just especially trying to encourage the devotees and inspire the devotees. So you should see them not with, as Maharaj is saying, the Maharajas are saying, not always nitpicking pluses or minuses, but you should see them as a servant of Srila Prabhupada. Thus, everything they're doing is glorious up until the point, unless something really goes wrong, you know, something really goes wrong in their spiritual life. But otherwise, generally speaking, they're doing wonderful service. Therefore, that is, if you see them in a relationship with Srila Prabhupada, then you won't get hung up on these on this point.
One last point on this point. The example that Prabhupada gives, he says, just like he was saying of himself, out of his humility, he was saying, just like I may not be liberated soul, but if I'm falling liberated soul, to that degree that I'm falling, I am liberated. So he gets, also gives the same example. Just like I may not be expert mechanic, but if I follow somebody who's an expert mechanic, and to the degree that I follow him, to that degree I'm expert mechanic. So in the same way, we have to see, if we're looking for perfection, we just simply have to see to what degree are they following the instructions of the perfect spiritual master. And that's what we have to look at.
This is for Jetha Swami Maharaj. My mind tends to plan the whole day's program in my morning japa time. What is the solution to this problem?
Well, one thing is you're doing pretty well. It takes me all day.
This is for His Holiness Niranjan Swami Maharaj. How have you developed such close relationships with His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj in a relatively short span of time? Please tell us so that we can develop very close relationships with our God brothers.
Such short span of time? Is that what you said? Well, I don't see it as such a short span of time. And when I first associated with him, it was over 20 years ago. But but I guess maybe that's a short span of time. But my relationship with His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj began when I first associated with him over 20 years ago, when I traveled with him in America. And I feel that because of that experience I had during the time that I traveled with him over a period of some weeks, I can't remember how long it actually was, I felt gratitude right from the very beginning. And that sense of gratitude, of how he accepted me. He had just recently taken sannyas, and I was a candidate to take sannyas, and I was recommended to travel with Radhanath Maharaj. So I actually went there with the hope of getting some association, getting some experience, And the result was is that I got much more than what I even expected to get. So because of that, gratitude naturally awakened within my heart, and I never forgot it. So even though throughout all those years that we were in separation, I never forgot that gratitude I had. And I would always look for opportunities. And he would note how, although he was, for that period of time, as many of you know, when they're not part of ISKCON, he would always take notice of how I was always looking for opportunities to associate with him. When he was thinking, why are you coming to associate? But I would always look for opportunities to go and associate. And I think probably that was the beginning of how everything else naturally developed afterwards. Because we had an appreciation for each other, then naturally the relationship grew into something that was very close and very binding.
This Pajjati Swami Maharaj.
Hello, hello. Yeah, about that previous one about chanting, there's one practical thing and one spiritual thing. On the practical side, you can, if you have a data plan, you can set aside some time in the previous day, say in the evening or whenever, and plan out what you're going to do the next day. Or if you're chanting, you can think that when I'm finished with my chanting, there'll be some time, and I'll plan out my day then. In terms of direct, that's just like that's textbook management stuff. In terms of spiritual textbooks, we should fix our mind on the sound of the holy name. The practice of chanting is that wherever the mind goes, we simply have to bring it back to the transcendental sound. That's the discipline. That's the practice. The mind, by its nature, it's going to go here, it's going to go there. If it's not thinking about planning the day, it's going to be thinking about something else. So we have to bring it back to the sound of the holy name. That's our discipline.
This is a follow-up of the previous question about Hiranyakashipu. If the lifespan in Treta Yuga is 10,000 years, then the 14 years of exile for Lord Ramchandra is not a very big time. Yet the Lord's exile period is considered to be very big. Why?
Prabhupada said, how long was Putana a witch? How many trees did she knock down? How many men did she kill? These are examples of questions that are not so essential.
Next one is, we see that other spiritualists, other than Krishna conscious devotees, that is Mayavadis, Brahmavadis, Buddhists, at least some of them are able to practice their philosophy and maintain their renunciation. How can they do this if they are devoid of any higher taste of devotional service?
They have some assets. Someone is a transcendentalist. Of course, we regularly flay these Brahmavadis, Buddhists, and so on. But they have some credit that they're disgusted with this material world. They've seen the futility of material existence. And so they're seeking some better thing. And it may be that just in the hope of that better thing, you know, they haven't actually landed in the realm of that better thing, but they have some hope that there must be something better than this material world. That much good fortune they have, that much credit they have. So they take to some transcendental method, they take to austerity or study or whatever, but for lack of proper guidance, for lack of proper direction, they don't come directly to devotional service. So again, that's why it's important for the preachers to be active, so that these persons who do have that spark of good fortune, that they, out of thousands and thousands and thousands of men, Manusyanam Sahasreshu, out of thousands, somebody actually thinks, enough of this material world, I've had it, I don't want it anymore. So then the devotees have to be there to tell them, well, all right, then come here. And even those who've taken to some discipline or some path, Mayavadi or this or that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was preaching to them about Krishna consciousness. So we have a lot of work to do.
This is from Makhanlal Prabhu. How to choose our spiritual master? Am I really at that platform to choose my own spiritual master?
Well, first of all, whoever is thinking like that should be very cautious. That means there's a lot of doubt and confusion. The first point is you should try to understand what is guru. Therefore, you should read in Srila Prabhupada's books until you can get a better understanding of what is guru. And you should not be looking for someone who's infallible. I don't know, I seriously doubt that you will find any of Srila Prabhupada's disciples who are initiating disciples who claim to be infallible. I don't believe that you're going to find anyone. You can ask. I don't think you're going to find any of my godbrothers who are initiating students that are going to say that they're infallible. So first of all, try to understand what is guru. And remember, Krishna says, Tad vidhi pranipatena paripasthena sevya ubarikshanti tehi gyanam gananastatva darshanam. You can approach the spiritual master. You inquire submissively. Try to get to know him. If you're not inspired by somebody, then don't take initiation from them. In some respects, it's rather basic. During the so-called Zonal Acharya era of history of ISKCON, back in the mid-1980s, actually it was a disaster for ISKCON. Why? Because people were taking initiation from somebody they didn't even like. That's not the process. Finally, after much suffering and thousands of devotees left this movement, and since the movement has become older and wiser, they realize, oh, actually, that didn't work so good. You can't legislate the heart. The real issue is you can't legislate the heart. If you're moved, touched, and inspired somebody, then you should consider taking initiation from them. But also, perhaps, let's say you are in a situation, you're taking an, and you hear one of ISKCON's authorized bona fide spiritual masters, you hear a lecture or something like that, you become very inspired and say, oh yes, he's the one. But actually you're expecting that you're going to have a very close and intimate one-on-one relationship for the rest of your life with that person, or for the rest of his life or her life, for those I think that Mother Malati, she's initiating, isn't she? Or not initiating. Anyways, eventually there'll probably be some God sisters initiating also. So the point is that you should be very cautious, get to know the person, get to know their seva. If they have 3,000 disciples, but your expectation is that you're going to have non-stop email correspondence, or that you're going to be continually getting lots of one-on-one personal attention, then you'll end up disappointed with that person. It's very dangerous because you might even fall away from Krishna consciousness. Oh, I took so initiation from such and such Maharaj, and he never paid any attention to me, and so I don't see the point of this whole thing, and da-da-da-da-da. No, that can be very risky. You have to be inspired by the example that that person sets in their service to Srila Prabhupada's mission. Maybe you won't have a lot of personal experience. So you have to put a lot of things on the table and weigh it, just like you see in an Indian vegetable market. You see vegetables this side, weights this side. That's how you have to select a spiritual master. You have to, well, I'm very inspired in this way and this way and this way, but I don't know, this, I have some doubt about this and this. You can weigh it out, and then you should approach that person. If you have some doubt, you're thinking about initiation, but you have some doubt, then you should send an email or make some inquiry from senior disciples, etc. But you should definitely know who you are going to take initiation from, and there's no rush. This is not, you know, a fad. You know, Prabhupada made that very clear. He said it's not a fashion. Having a spiritual master is not a fashion. It's a permanent decision, actually. So it's a multi-lifetime decision. It's an eternal decision, because in the spiritual world, we will all be in Prabhupada's family. So first point is read carefully in Prabhupada's books, understand what is guru. Second point is make certain that the person that you're going to take initiation from, inquire from senior disciples, find out what their style, methodology, and things. Make sure that you're okay with that, so that you can be dedicated. Then you will be have no doubts.
This is for Jayadev Swami Maharaj. Two parts. Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish a Daivi Varnashram system which includes devotees with Kshatriya attributes and qualities. Can this be accomplished?
Why not?
How?
Yeah, Prabhupada wanted to do it, then it's assumed that it can be done. There are different qualities. Kshatriya means rule, management, take charge mentality, Ishvara Bhava. So, why not? For that matter, military, there can be devotees who have military service, police. But if we had a full, suppose if this were a village and we had, 500 or 1,000 devotees. So some would be engaged in agriculture, some would be engaged in teaching, some would have to manage things, someone would have to be in charge of the police department or the government of the village. So there's scope for everybody to be engaged properly, and some would be assistants.
The second part is that today there are so many people claiming to be Bhagavan, and gullible innocent people surrender to these hoaxes in hordes. All these people could be saved and brought into the fold of Krishna consciousness if such hoaxes or pseudo bhagavans are exposed by defeating them in a debate or by some other method. Is it all right for ISKCON with its strong philosophy to remain silent?
No, we're not supposed to be silent at all. That's the one thing we're not supposed to be, is silent. We may not particularly name such and such person, then that doesn't really get very far, because there's all these people who are saying, this Bhagavan is the greatest, and we come there and say, that Bhagavan is a dog. And it doesn't really go very far. Prabhupada quoted the saying that if you kill a skunk with your hand gets a bad smell. So we may not name such people, but we put forward what the actual situation is, and we have the expression, if the shoe fits, wear it. That is to say, if the description we give fits your Bhagavan, our description of a rascal, if that fits your Bhagavan, then he's a rascal. Huh? A person who's simply a magician, a person who's recommending all adharma, a person who has none of the, can't demonstrate any of the characteristics of Bhagavan. He opens the biggest hospital in India, and now he's Bhagavan. Huh? So we may not name such rascals, but we have to speak strongly. What is Bhagavan? What is the characteristics of Bhagavan? What is a pseudo-Bhagavan? And then people can understand what is what. We should not be silent. We should speak very loudly.
This is for Niranjan Swami Maharaj. Why, when Krishna disappeared, did he submerge Dwarka in the ocean and bring about the destruction of his Yadu dynasty?
Well, Prabhupada, this explains, I guess it's in the 11th canto, that Krishna brought about the destruction of the Yadu dynasty because nobody else could do it, because they were Krishna's associates. Therefore, Krishna had to make any arrangement to have them destroyed. That's the answer. Mm-hmm. Krishna had to do it because no one else could do it, because they were Krishna's associates.
This is for Jayadev Swami Maharaj. Suppose I have done very sinful activity which I only know, but I don't want to tell others. thinking about my fame, is it hypocrisy? How can I be free from it?
Is it hypocrisy?
Yes.
It's hypocrisy if you keep doing it. That you're presenting yourself as an advanced devotee, but you're committing sinful activities. But past, it's not that I have to come out, you know, in front of an assembly and said, 5 years ago I did this, and 10 years before I did that, and when I was in high school I did this, and I did this sinful act. It's not that we all have to have, you know, instead of this session of Krishna Katha, we could all come up one after another and tell all the sinful things that we did before we came to Krishna consciousness. That's not required. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he made Jagai and Madhai devotees. He forgave them for all their sinful activities. He just said, now don't do it anymore. Stop. That's the end. It doesn't matter what someone's background of sinful activities, how many, what kind, where, how. Krishna consciousness means yesham twantagatam papam. To come to the end, put an end to sinful activities. That's all. Just stop. We don't have to talk about it. We just have to stop it.
This is for Makhanlal Prabhu. What is the relationship between showing compassion towards others and showing humility? Because in compassion we have to consider ourselves higher than others, and in humility we consider ourselves lower than others.
Who says compassion you have to declare yourself higher than others? That's bogus. We're Vaishnavas. We follow what the Shastra says. Please show me in the Shastra where it says that. This is called mental speculation. You know, when people write questions like this, they're not reading enough in Prabhupada's books. Show me where it says anything like that. To be compassionate on others, you must think of yourself higher than them. You're not going to find it in Prabhupada's books. Again, Gopi Paragalam Das Anudasada Das, Paradukha Dukhi. We say Paradukha Dukhi. The Vaishnavas are concerned about raising others above suffering condition. Para means above, but that's raising them above suffering condition. It doesn't mean that we are above them. And are, you know, even if a Vaishnav thinks that we are above somebody else, they must see themselves as being a via media inside of the parampara. An example can be like mountain climbing. When the mountain climbing is done, supposing you're going up a very dangerous mountain like the Himalayas, the supermaster, the best mountain climber, is at the top of the rope system, then another mountain climber is down below, and others are lower and lower on the rope. And supposing there are some very inexperienced persons who are going to die if they don't get a hold on the same rope, if they don't connect with the same rope, they're going to die for sure and be severely injured, etc. Then you try to make an arrangement to bring them into that situation. But you can't be thinking about how you're above them and this and that, with this false ego pride. That's not inside of Vaishnav way of doing things. So there shouldn't be this false distinction between being above others and compassion. Everything we do is on the absolute platform.
This is for Niranjan Swami Maharaj. There are various qualities of devotees mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. So should one work on each of them, or would they come to us automatically? How do we imbibe these qualities mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita?
Prabhupada would many times quote that verse from 5th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. All the good qualities of the demigods, just knowledge, religion, renunciation, will automatically become manifest in the devotee of the Lord. On the other hand, a non-devotee cannot have any good qualities. So, Prabhupada, even speaking about his own disciples, he would quote that verse, saying just that they are automatically developing good qualities because they're becoming lovers of God. So, certainly, a devotee will automatically develop all good qualities. But what about, well, till we get to that point when we actually become devotees. Therefore, certainly, we should try to develop the various qualities that are given, the characteristics of a devotee of the Lord. We have to practice. Devotional service in the beginning stages is practice until we actually become fully qualified. Just like, what is that verse? Smartavyam satatam vishno vismartavyo najatu chit. Sabhaviti nisyedisyo etiyo eva kinkura. This verse describes that Krishna must be remembered and Krishna must never be forgotten. All the rules and all the prohibitions which are given in the scriptures are meant to be the servant, are meant to serve this principle. So, the vidhis and the shedhas, the prescribed activities, there are positive activities and there are also prohibited activities. Both are meant ultimately to always remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in the commentary to this verse, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that here we see the word satatam, which means always. So, well, if it's always, the devotee always remembers the Supreme Lord, then why does he have to follow rules and prohibitions? And because one's not really on that platform yet where he can always remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead, therefore he must follow rules, prescribed activities, which will help him, and prohibited activities until he comes to that platform where he can always remember the Supreme Lord. Therefore, he says the word satatam in this verse means every day. That is the difference. So every day means every day we have to practice remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead because we cannot always remember him. So in the same way, until we actually come to the stage as perfect devotees and automatically develop all good qualities, until we come to that platform, we have to practice developing these qualities. We practice developing simplicity, tolerance, humility, pridelessness. These are all natural qualities for the soul, but because we still have many impurities within our heart, we practice these qualities. And at the same time, we try to fix our mind on Krishna, and then automatically they'll come when we become actually completely Krishna conscious.
This is for Jayadev Swami Maharaj. Why are Krishna's ways of doing things so complicated? To stop misuse of Vedas, he comes as Buddha, rejecting the authority of Vedas. To overcome this and to establish Vedas again, he comes with Shankara's impersonal Brahman, giving chance for this pseudo-spirituality. Why like this?
Why should you criticize? If you want simplicity, Krishna comes as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and says, Sarva Dharman Pratyajya Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. Simple. Now do it. But you want to do something else. You want to be complicated. So then Krishna makes complicated arrangements to deal with you. From another point of view, you're not appreciating. You know, in a good story, sometimes the plot is very complicated. So if you read the book and say, why is the plot so complicated? Because it's a good book. Stupid. It means you have no artistic appreciation how the author has done all these things and made the plot complicated. So sometimes Krishna is very, very simple. He just comes and says, surrender. And sometimes Krishna does things in a different way. That means he's versatile. It means he can do things in many different ways. It's not stereotyped that all he can do is say, here I am, surrender, here I am, surrender, here I am, surrender. He can appear as a fish, he can appear as a tortoise, he can appear as half lion, half man, he can appear as his own devotee. He can appear in so many different ways.
Another one for Jayadev Swami Maharaj. Srila Prabhupada wanted his disciples or followers to become independently thoughtful. How can we do this while still remaining submissive to our authorities?
I'm tempted to say, follow their instructions and do it and think what you like. independently thoughtful doesn't mean, well, let's think about it a second. How do we become independently thoughtful while still following our authorities? There are different kinds of authorities. Certainly we shouldn't become so independently thoughtful that we're independent of the spiritual master. That's not what Prabhupada meant. That Prabhupada called that over-intelligent, not independently thoughtful. Over-intelligent. So that we have to keep always before us, that we have to be submissive to the spiritual master. We have to follow his instructions. We should not overstep him. Now, in carrying out the spiritual master's instructions, there tends to be a standard way of doing things. Now, sometimes that standard is coming from scripture. Sometimes that standard is coming from carefully thought out ideas. And sometimes that standard is just coming from inertia. Well, we've always done it this way, so that's how we're going to do it. Or we just don't have another idea. I'm talking about practical affairs. Some method of preaching, some method of spreading Krishna consciousness. Well, we've always done it this way, so this is how we're doing it. Even though we're not getting results, even though it's not bringing about, even though we're not getting results, we just keep doing the same thing without thinking, is there another way to do it? Is there another way to do it? Is there a new contribution we can make? With the aim of carrying out the instruction of the spiritual master, not becoming an outlaw and not reinventing all of the, tossing out the tradition, not that kind of independently thoughtful, but intelligent, how to carry out the spiritual master's instruction, how to implement what the spiritual master wanted. So we were hearing this morning that Devamrita Maharaj said that they were going to the concerts. Prabhupada never said go to the rock concert, but they thought, let's go to the rock concert and it'll be a good place for distributing books. Then they thought, well, where should we go inside the rock concert? Well, everyone has to go to the bathroom, let's go there and stand outside. And then, well, why not stand inside? So that's intelligence. How to do things in such a way as to carry out the spiritual master, not the spiritual master's desire. Not that, well, everyone's doing it this way, I have to do it this way. I can also examine it and say, why are we doing it this way? Is there another way to do it? Is there another possibility? And we've seen that many times in preaching, where our preachers will be very successful by just looking at it and saying, this isn't working, is there another way to do this? That's independently thoughtful. And it doesn't mean that now we get into a fight with all the authorities and we're going to, smash and clash. But it means that we have a brain, we can think about it, and look and see if there's some way to apply it. It doesn't mean uncooperative, independently thoughtful, therefore uncooperative. But I can make a contribution by thinking for myself and saying, well, is there another way to do this? Let me think if there's anything else independently thoughtful.
This is for Niranjan Swami Maharaj.
No. It also means that while studying the literature, we think about it. That it's not that we think about what we're reading. That I try to understand everything, not by speculation, not by innovation or concoction, but that I'm thinking, what does this mean? How does this apply to my life? How does it apply to my environment, to the world? That's independently thoughtful, not just that I kind of sit there and nod and say, yeah. But I'm thinking. I'm thinking about Krishna consciousness. Yeah.
Prabhuji, take the mic, please.
Prabhupada said, just study my books, but repeat in your own words.
Hmm.
So that's independently thoughtful.
Yeah.
and that's just repeating like a machine. You're thinking about it and expressing it according to your own realizations within your heart.
Yeah. Yeah, the Prabhupada said that's realization, that it, when you can assimilate the knowledge and then express it in your own words or apply it. Prabhupada said the realization means practical application. Again, anyone, we can all read from the book and said, in the fourth chapter, in the second verse, it says this, and that's the answer to your question. And it may be, that may be sufficient. But sometimes we have to think and say, now, how does this verse apply to such and such circumstance? That's thoughtfulness.
Yeah, good. Thank you.
This is Pandiranjan Swami Maharaj. Chanting, dancing and feasting is very nice and can be done in the Pune Yatra. But outside, the struggle for survival overcomes our consciousness, not material greed, but simply maintaining the status quo.
Not to what? I'm sorry.
Not, it is not material greed.
Material greed. Huh.
But simply to maintain the status quo, that overwhelms us and our sadhana is affected. So how to balance this?
Well, Chila Bhakti Vinod Thakur explains in his Vaishnava Siddhanta Mala, in his commentary to Nadiya Godunami Nityananda Mahajan, he explains that how is it that one can incessantly chant the holy name of the Lord. He says that it's not that one gives up the responsibilities of his particular status in life, whether he be household, brahmachari, or vanaprast, or sannyas. He says if one gives up his responsibilities and his particular status of life, he said, then how will he be able to live? He will expire untimely. I think those are the words that he uses. Therefore, one has to, he says, in this particular context, therefore, to incessantly chant the holy name of the Lord means that one has to perform his duties simply because they are to be done, but he performs them for the ultimate purpose of utilizing his human form of life and that of his family members for chanting, dancing, and taking Krishna prasadam. That is the whole goal for maintaining one's life in his body. What is that verse in the Bhagavad? Kamasya nindriya pratiya labo jivete yavata jivasya tatva jigyasa nata yasti hakarmabhi. Life's desire should never be directed towards sense gratification. One should desire to live because the human form of life enables him to inquire to the absolute truth. This should be the goal of his work. So the goal of his work in this world, so-called maintaining the status quo, just simply the basic necessities of life, the goal is for chanting, dancing, and taking Krishna prasadam and the association of devotees. And if he remains fixed that is the goal, then all his work has an objective and becomes Gona Dharma. It becomes a support for his devotional service. But if he forgets what is the goal, and if he's never chanting, dancing, and taking prasadam in the association of devotees, then what is the value of such a prolonged life, which is wasted and inexperienced by years in this world, as explained in the Bhagavatam? So, therefore, the goal of our work in this world is to chant, dance, and feast in the association of devotees. And if we don't do it, then some siddhi haritoshana. What is that verse? Dharma finishita pungsam vishvaksenu katasya notpariya dhira ting shrama eva hi kevalam. We're wasting our time. The occupational activities a man performs according to his own position is considered to be simply so much useless labor if it doesn't provoke attraction for hearing and chanting about Krishna. So that is the goal. So although we may have to do it, we simply perform these duties in relationship to the body, and our relationship to our own bodies, maintaining our bodies, maintaining the bodies of our family members. We perform it as simply as a matter of duty. That is all. And therefore, if we perform it as a matter of duty for the higher purpose of chanting, dancing, and feasting in the association of devotees, and coming into the association such as such festivals, here is the Pune Yatra, attending weekly festivals at the temple, having festivals in one's home, inviting devotees to the home for chanting, dancing, and taking prasadam. This is the goal of all of one's work. And if one is fixed, then certainly Krishna will facilitate.
You also have to select a favorable lifestyle. I mean, you're describing a favorable lifestyle. Even if you don't have people over to your apartment on a regular basis or something, but, you know, you have to make certain decisions not to stay up till 11:30 at night so you that you sleep in until 7:30, gulp down something and run off to work or whatever. That's unfavorable. You have to arrange a life so you take rest early, rise early, chant your rounds before you go to work. Don't watch karmi television. You know, these kind of decisions you have to make, commitments you have to make are very important. There must be a first-class temple shrine in your home where you do your bhajan, you do your reading every day together with a wife and children or roommates or whatever. You have to make, you have to commit to, as soon as you're home from that work, you know, if you turn on a television, basically you're a dead man, you know. So you have to commit to the Krishna conscious lifestyle as soon as you get home and as much as possible at work. It's a commitment to a way of life. If you do that, then always listening to kirtan, always listening to tapes of your spiritual master and Srila Prabhupada, always reading his books, preferably together with someone else in that time, that time slot you have when you get home. Besides eating, you have to do that hearing and chanting.
One has to be independently thoughtful.
This is for Jayadev Swami Maharaj. How should we achieve the conviction that Krishna consciousness life is superior to a life of sense gratification, especially sex pleasure?
How should we get that conviction? Well, there are different ways to get that conviction. The best way to get that conviction is by hearing from self-realized persons who've thoroughly understood it. By hearing, and then by realizing that subject matter by careful thought, that this is what they're saying. How is this true? That's the best way, by hearing. The worst way is by going through it and finding out for yourself. Another way is by seeing. Practically, all these other people who are trying it out for themselves, are they happy? Are they in always joyful life? America, they have full scope for cat and dog sort of sex life. Is everyone there in bliss and ecstasy? So it's a little intelligent that if I follow the path of these people, where am I going to be? I'm going to be where they are. And where are they? They're in confusion and misery. So why should I follow them? And if I follow these people, the Mahajans, the self-realized souls, then another destination. So by hearing, by seeing, by enlightened seeing, anudarshan, what is that? Gyanachakshusha. Mudhoyam na anupashanti, pashanti gyanachakshusha. In the Bhagavad Gita, it said that the fools don't see by following. Real seeing is not just seeing, but it's seeing by following those who've seen clearly. Itishu shumadhirana yenas tadvitichakshire. So when we see that way, then we actually see. Mudho yam nanu pashanti, pashanti jnana chakshusha. We have to see with eyes of knowledge. Where do we get that knowledge? From the spiritual master, from the sadhus, from the scriptures.
This is again for Jayadev Swami Maharaj. I feel a great difference between my perspective to Krishna consciousness internally and externally. What I show is totally different. Please guide me to reducing this difference.
There's a difference between what we feel internally and what we show.
Or what I am internally and externally, what I show to others.
What I am internally and what I show to others. What to do about that? Well, the whole world, everyone is putting on a show of what they are. There's, in sociology, it's called construction of identity, and there's all sorts of talk about that. But we construct some sort of projection for to create, favorably impress others. So that's a natural human enterprise. But a Vaishnava practices taking a humble position, not showing I'm... Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur criticizes that I'm a great Vaishnava, I've got Kanti Mala, I've got this. It's not that we're taking to Krishna consciousness to project to others that we're great devotees. That's a path to fall down. But we should take the path of being humble, therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Amanina Manadena. Not that we're after being respected, we always act in such a way that people will think we're great. But we should take the humble position. Amanina Manadena. That path. That path. And internally we should try to be purified. Externally we should try to, turn down the show. And internally we should try to increase our assets. If you want to reduce the disparity between what's outside and what's inside, and reduce the outside, what do they say, tarak barak? Is that right? The outside pomp and show, and increase the internal substance.
This question is for Niranjan Swami Maharaj. In Krishna consciousness, we have a special time for chanting and hearing. When should we contemplate on what we have heard? Because when we don't contemplate what we have heard, it just becomes a lot of data. And how to contemplate on what we have heard?
When, meaning what time of the day? Or or when, meaning at what stage in our life? I don't quite understand the definition of when in the question.
Seems when means after that particular event is over.
Well, certainly, one actually has to digest that which he has heard. But depending upon one's faith and the source of that knowledge, that person can help it to be digested very quickly. In other words, if Srila Prabhupada gives the example that if the man is potent and the woman is fertile, then conception takes place. So similarly, if the speaker is realized, and if the hearer is capable of assimilating that which is being presented to him, then digestion takes place simultaneously, practically speaking. So it just simply depends upon the qualification of the speaker and the qualification of the hearer. If the hearer is very fertile, then actually it will enter within the ears, just of satam prasanga mamaviya sampado bhavanti hritkana rasayana kata. Right? In the association of devotees, discussions of pastimes, activities and pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they're very pleasing to the ear and the heart. So pleasing to the ear and the heart means is that something is happening when it's entering into the ears, that is, it's actually creating a sense of pleasure, satisfaction within the self simply by entering in the ears. It's already entering into the heart. So this is certainly the most essential type of hearing and chanting, is to have both qualified speaker and qualified hearers. Right? Just like, what is it, Sutta Goswami says, oh, sages, I have been justly questioned by you, your questions are glorious. No, what is that? Munya sarupishto hamba vibhya loka mangalam? Yes. In other words, he's glorifying the persons who are asking the questions. Yet you're qualified. What's the other verse? What's the translation?
That, my dear King, your questions are glorious.
Yes, questions are glorious. Only questions of this sort can satisfy the soul. So, therefore, both have to be there. So, when could be immediately. And, of course, if we can't really assimilate it all immediately, then certainly, if it's something that has any kind of impact within our heart, and thoughtful, and we really appreciate it, then it's immediately after we hear it. We should begin to consider what we've heard, especially since hearing means acting. If we're not hearing and then acting upon what we heard, if it's the absolute truth, if we hear, we have to act. Otherwise, it's just simply a vibration going on in the ear. But if we're actually hearing, it means it's very compelling. So if we actually heard something and it was very, very relevant to our existence, then certainly we'll want to act very quickly before we lose it.
This is Pradyada Swami Maharaj. The Mayavadis say they got Atma Sakshatkar.
Atma Sakshatkar
or self-realized. Mayavadis claim to be self-realized. So what kind of self-realization they get from this world?
What kind of self-realization do they get from this?
From this world.
This word? This world?
This world.
What kind of self-realization do they get from this world?
Yeah, that's the question.
The Mayavadis, they can, of course, understand by discriminating between what is permanent and what is temporary. They can understand that I'm consciousness, that I'm not this body. And that's good. For that much territory, we're in agreement that this material world is not the place for enjoyment, that we're not this body, we're not the mind, we're the eternal Brahma, or conscious living entity within the body. Now that's fine. And they get, there's a certain amount of self-satisfaction. Prasanatma, Brahmabhuta Prasanatma. When one identifies with the soul, it's kind of like relief. For so long I was thinking I was this body, I was thinking that all the pains and pleasures of this body pertain to me, I was thinking I was this, I was that, now I know I'm not this body, I'm not any of these things, so he gets relief from this material misidentification. Nashochati nakangshati, he no longer has anything to hanker for, he no longer has anything to lament for. Sama sarveshu bhuteshu, he sees everything with an equal eye. That's all good. But now he has to go further. Sama sarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate pranam. Now he has to take to devotional service. Because otherwise, what do I do on the platform of spiritual realization? Do I just sit here, aham brahmasmi, aham brahmasmi, aham brahmasmi, aham brahmasmi? There has to be some practical activity on the Brahman platform. Otherwise, we fall down. And therefore, we see that people who are supposedly self-realized, great realized souls and so on, after announcing that this world is false and that only Brahman is real, they open hospitals, they open, you know, different institutions for the welfare of the material bodily welfare of the people in general. Now, if the world is false and only Brahman is real, what are you doing that for? What are you doing that for? So they have no practical platform of activity. And therefore, they've only reached the initial stage of self-realization. Now they have to go further. Some satisfaction is there, and it can become their enemy also. You're just like a person who's satisfied in material life. He doesn't make any further progress because he's satisfied. He's thinking, this is nice, I have my wife, I have my children, I have my job, I have my car, I have my this, I have my that. What do I need spiritual life for? So that so-called satisfaction becomes his enemy. Similarly, the satisfaction of the impersonalist, that now I've risen above the material platform, I know that I'm Brahma, I know that I have nothing to do with this world, that becomes his enemy also, because it holds him back from asking, now what do I do? What goes further? What's my next stage in progress? So that has to come.
This one is again for you, Jayadeva Swami Maharaj. When we explain spiritual truths by means of an analogy to some people, they say that, why do you give a material example for a spiritual principle? These are totally opposite in nature. They are opposite in nature. Why do you give a material example for a spiritual principle?
Do you have any experience of spiritual examples?
So the question is, how spiritual things can work in a similar way like matter?
You're comparing your wife's face to the moon. Now, how can you do that? Huh? Is your wife really, you know, shining throughout the whole sky? Huh? You're doing that in your practical, all your practical affairs, or in your poetry you're making such comparisons, in your practical affairs you make such comparisons. Intelligence actually is the ability to compare one thing with another. The maker of Velcro, you know Velcro? Velcro is that stuff in fabric. It has like little teeth and it sticks to one thing, sticks to another thing. So the inventor of Velcro, I'm told, he was observing some plants and how these little thistles become stuck to your clothing. And he thought that, you know, he understood something's going on there. And then he applied it to the world of fabric and became a millionaire. So it's simply the ability to see something in one place and transfer it to another place. That's intelligence. Now, if you're not intelligent, we have a problem. If you can't understand an example, if you can't understand how this situation is similar in some ways but different, that's what an example is. It's something that's similar to one thing in some ways but different in another way. So we understand practically so many things by example. And the example may not be, if it matched in every respect, it wouldn't be an example anymore. It would just, you'd just be a description. Huh? So we understand things by example. And why are we using material examples? Because that's where you are. Huh? You're not a resident of the spiritual world that I can take something from here and there, and you don't understand it yet. We don't take an example from algebra to explain simple mathematics. Huh? It's practical. No good example comes to mind right now. You got a good one?
I just want to... Prabhupada uses an analogy to explain why analogies are used. He uses the analogy that if you're looking at the moon in the sky and you want to see how it is moving, you can look for a long time. And it's very difficult just looking directly at the moon. He said, but if you look at the moon through the branches of the trees, then because the branches of the trees are closer to you, you can very easily see how the moon is moving between one branch and the next. So he said, therefore, we also need analogies, something which is closer to our experience to help us understand that which is beyond our experience.
This is for Niranjan Swami Maharaj. When a devotee is initiated, the spiritual master takes responsibility for taking that devotee back to Godhead. If, however, the devotee does not go back to Godhead in that life, how and in what form does the spiritual master come back to save that devotee in the next life, and how does the devotee recognize him?
How does the devotee what?
Recognize his spiritual master.
Well, first of all, once a devotee asks you the Prabhupada that question, he said, Srila Prabhupada, if I don't go back to Godhead in this life, you'll come back and get me. And Prabhupada said, yes, but don't take advantage of it. Don't make your spiritual master come back. So, anyways, that in itself is somewhat of an answer to the question. Yes, if One accepts a genuine, bona fide spiritual master, and if that connection is an eternal connection between the disciple and the spiritual master, then certainly the spiritual master is accepting responsibility for that disciple to take him back home, back to Godhead. How will the disciple recognize the spiritual master? Well, how did he recognize the spiritual master when he first met the spiritual master? It's like a question that was already asked. How does one recognize the spiritual master? One actually has to recognize the spiritual master just in terms of how is this person delivering Krishna to me? And one, of course, has to be have to some degree some qualification for recognizing spiritual master. That is that one has to at least have a desire to see Krishna. If one actually has a very genuine desire to see Krishna manifest and is praying, Krishna, please manifest yourself to me through the words of spiritual master, then if one has begun his journey in this life, and Krishna says whatever he has achieved in this life, he will continue and carry to the next life, that next life, that same desire will be there, and he'll recognize in the same way. We're losing.
This is for Makhanlal Prabhu. How can we preach though we haven't realized it? What is the best attitude to assimilate when we read Srila Prabhupada's books? So how do we preach?
Two questions. First you say, how can we preach if we haven't realized it?
Yeah. Maybe then, two questions.
Well, let me just take the first question and reread the second question, please. How can we preach if we haven't realized it? Well, there's two things. There's gyan and vigyan. Gyan means knowledge, and vigyan means the practical application. Everyone, including a newer devotee, first of all, a newer devotee should be trained by more experienced devotees. Because our ISKCON spiritual masters, physically speaking, are spread very thin due to their commitments and working very hard all over the world, 3,000, 4,000 disciples. They can't take you aside and sit down one-on-one and train you personally in Krishna consciousness. So you have to make a commitment to studying Srila Prabhupada's books and hearing and learning from senior devotees how to practice. So vigyan means the practical application. Even if you're a newer devotee, you need to be able to, you apply as you are practicing, just like Krishna Prasadam. Do you really need somebody to tell you if it tastes good? If it tastes good, you experience it. That's a type of vigyan. It's the practical application. You read in the scripture that Krishna Prasadam is very nice. Then you sit down and the cook is good and you taste it. That's a type of vigyan. It's the practical application of what you read in the book. This is a simple example, you know. So in every way, because somebody earlier asked, how do you know whether you're experiencing Krishna consciousness or something? I mean, again, the same example, is you eat something, if it tastes good, then you know it's good. So you have to appreciate, particularly again, comes back to hearing, especially from Prabhupada's books and from senior devotees and from your associates in general, what you are practicing so you can develop the appreciation, so you can take gyan, the theoretical, and transform it into vigyan, the practical application and the realization, and then realization can also gradually becomes revelation. Even a newer devotee can get realization one after another as you're chanting Hare Krishna, your realization should increase, you're doing seva to the devotees, your realization should increase gradually. If you're hearing and chanting nicely, your realization should gradually increase. So then it shouldn't be so theoretical. If it's too theoretical for you, then maybe you are making too many offenses while chanting the holy names. You see, one must make a conscious endeavor to give up offenses against the holy name. Just like earlier someone asked, how come senior devotees fall down, why aren't they protected by Krishna? Because they make the primary reason that devotees fall down is Vaishnava Parad. And Krishna will not, we know from the story of Maharaj Ambarish, Krishna will not protect even a devotee against Vaishnava Aparad. They have to make up for that Aparad. That's crystal clear from the pastime of Maharaj Ambarish, that when Durvasa Muni went to Lord Narayan himself, please protect me, he said, I'm very sorry, I can't help you. You have to go back to Ambarish Maharaj. And so he went running back with the chakra going after him high speed, and he fell after his Dandavat Pranams at the lotus feet of Ambarish Maharaj. So you have to not make Vaishnava Parad while you're rendering service so that you can advance, and then your vigyan, your realization, and ultimately revelation, things will be revealed to you, sarvasya chaham hridi sannivisto, because Krishna is in the heart. Gradually things will be revealed to you if you sincerely practice Krishna consciousness and good association, as the Maharaj has been repeatedly pointing out, then it won't be theoretical for you. Okay, what's the next question?
What is the best attitude for assimilating what we read from Prabhupada's books?
The first important point is I should know I'm a fool, I'm an ass, I'm an ignorant person, I'm spiritually bankrupt. Oh, Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada, please help me to appreciate, help me to assimilate. You know, the attitude should be, I'm an ignorant person, I'm swimming in the darkness of bodily consciousness, please help me become enlightened by your transcendental messages and the messages of the previous acharyas and these beautiful shlokas of the pastimes of the great souls, the great devotees of the Lord, and the pastimes of the Lord. Please help me to appreciate this. And also, it's very important, read with another devotee, share with it, be interactive with another devotee. I see a lot of Prabhus here taking notes in these discussions. Taking notes is very good. I would suggest just the key points, not by rote, not just writing out everything, but taking most valuable gem points so you can go back and trigger your recollection so you know what you got out of that. You can do the same things while you're reading Prabhupada's books. You can also keep a journal of questions you could ask later in opportunities like this with senior devotees or any devotees. And so you can beg, pray, bandaman. Everyone here should pray. Everyone should pray to Srila Prabhupada. There's no conflict between your fidelity, your loyalty to your Guru Maharaj, and your loyalty to Srila Prabhupada. Everyone should pray to Prabhupada. Oh, Srila Prabhupada, please help me increase my appreciation. Help me increase my intention. Don't eat too much just before reading. You know, those practical things. Don't eat too much just before reading. Don't wait till 11 o'clock at night so you read three sentences and then... You know, you have to be, there's certain practical things, but it's most helpful if you hear and chant with another devotee, read several paragraphs, and then say to the other Prabhu, so what did you get out of that? And if they say, well, then you say, okay, I think we should read that again. You know? So you bounce it back and forth with another devotee. That will really help you, you know? Okay, thank you.
This is another catch-22 question for Jayadev Swami Maharaj. In ISKCON, when we get initiated, we get a spiritual name. Now, is that name eternal for that individual soul? If not, then how is it spiritual?
Is the name that you receive at initiation eternally associated with you? And if not, how is it eternal? The name itself is eternal, and your association with the Das part is eternal.
One more question for Jayadev Maharaj. Can devotees take painkiller medicines if they are experiencing excruciating bodily pain or they should just tolerate?
Why don't you ask Visvarup or Giriraj or whatever? These are practical things. It may be required in the course of medical treatment. We have nothing in our Krishna consciousness movement that says you can't take medicine for such and such. Just these things shouldn't be abused, but they have their proper usage.
The last one, before we end this session, we will have some more kirtan and then Gaurartik. After Gaurartik, we will have the multimedia show prepared by His Grace Jaduvar Prabhu. So the last one is for Niranjan Swami Maharaj. In the morning we had this lecture about seeing Krishna, understanding how Krishna is a person and seeing him. So the question is, when I take darshan of deities, I can perceive Krishna as a person. But when I take prasadam or I chant the Maha Mantra, I cannot perceive him as a person. So when and how will this be possible?
Premanjana Charita Bhakti Valochade Santaksa Daiva Hidesha Vilokyati. When one's eyes are anointed with the salve of love, then one will be able to see Krishna. So I believe the point that Maharaj was making in class is that we first have to learn how to see Krishna through the eyes of scripture, Shastra Chakshus, just like the different examples he gave, where just Prabhupada said that this is how we have to see. We have to learn how to see Krishna everywhere. And then by learning how to see in that way and making the effort, along with chanting in the holy name of the Lord, then gradually one will develop the qualification to actually see Krishna face to face. So then one has to be situated in the platform of love. Prabhupada used to quote the verse, Atakshi Krishna Namadi Nabhavid Grayam Indriyai Sevu Mukehi Jivado Svayam Eva Spuratyada. So Krishna cannot be seen with his blunt material senses. He can only be seen when one's senses are completely purified. So we have to purify the senses, beginning with the tongue, by always chanting the holy name of the Lord, glorifying the Lord, tasting Krishna prasadam. When the senses become completely purified, and the extra ingredient of that salve of love, then we'll see Krishna.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. So we would all like to thank you for giving us your wonderful association. So we would all like to thank all these wonderful souls. His Holiness Srila Jayadwaita Swami Maharaj Ki! His Holiness Niranjan Swami Maharaj Ki! His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj Ki! His Grace Makhanlal Prabhu Ki!